Welcome to the Next Gen Finance Podcast. This is season two, where we have two next geners who can debate. We encourage you guys to test each other and challenge each other in a good way. My name is Natalie Gerritsen, and I'm here today with Salima Tadeh, who's an investment management oversight officer at Fundrock, and William Armand, market services senior specialist at Schroders. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today, we are going to be talking about sustainability. So to start off, let's first introduce ourselves. I'll start with you, Salimata.
So my name is Salimata, and as a quick introduction, I was born in Dakar and grew up in France when I also did my studies. I started my career almost 7 years ago in Luxembourg in a Big Four as an auditor. And then I stepped into the management company world, where now I'm working as an investment management officer at Fundrock since 3 years.
Okay, welcome. Thank you. And you?
So I'm William. So my background is I have double nationality, France and British. So my dad's French, my mom's English. So I've grew up with a bit of a multicultural background. And I arrived in Luxembourg back in 2019 for an internship, continued in that company, decided to change jobs, and arrived in Schroders also about 3 years ago. And the funny story is we realized our offices are in the same building.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Not on the same floor, but yeah, on the same building.
And this is your first time meeting, though?
No, we've met multiple times before, okay.
Okay, well, thank you for the introductions. It's nice to have you here today. We're going to start by sort of setting the scene and getting listeners ready for the topic today. So let's ask some really basic questions to kick us off. Salimata, I'm going to start with you. Can you tell me what exactly is sustainable investing?
Sustainable investing is more related to ethics. If we have to take, let's take the food analogy, for example, which I believe speaks to everyone. If you were to define it, it will be this healthy meals, meaning kale and justice, compared to, you know, this fat burger made of rugged and goat ears. Basically, instead of throwing money at companies that are busy setting on fire the planet, we will say, okay, let's invest in those companies that are, let's say, saving us, while investing and making returns without making dolphin cries. If you have to define it in a more formal note, it will be the range of strategies in which investors include environmental, social and corporate governance criteria, also known as ESG criteria, into their investment decision and investor advocacy. So it is more about thinking critically into the investment that we're going to make.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to jump to the SFDR because there's been a lot of talk about different articles, Article 6, 8, and 9. So maybe, William, you can help us out there.
Sure. So SFDR is a EU regulation, actually from the ESMA. So to put it very simply, it's a set of European rules to help people like us, investors, understand how financial institutions use our money and to give transparency also on how that money is used in sustainable investing and basically how the money is used to do good for the planet and people, so society at large. So that's what SFDR aims to do. So it brings more transparency to the market, to the final end investors. And then basically SFDR breaks down products into three different categories. So you mentioned SFDR Article 6, 8, and 9. So an Article 6 is a basic product that has no ESG criteria whatsoever. It's just a plain basic investment fund. You would get then Article 8, which you can see as your light green fund. So it's a fund that takes into consideration ESG characteristics, but without necessarily having always a sustainable investment at its core of the strategy. And the last product is an Article 9 fund, which will indeed reach a certain threshold in their portfolio of sustainable investment in the portfolio. Okay. So that's the difference. So you have red, light green, and extremely green.
Okay, perfect. That's Thank you. Idea. I think that'll help us with our conversation today. So now, how robust is the appetite for sustainable investing?
I would say that this is great, getting increasingly popular, not only about the young generation, let's say the Gen Z, but also the millennials. Investors now really desire to add this positive impact through their investment. And it's gone beyond selling only goods and services. It's really a new mindset that is coming into this investment universe. And nowadays, I guess that the sustainable investment in general represent trillions of dollars or in euro within the investment funds. So, yeah, it's getting more and more known, and I believe that this is a good thing.
So maybe to add, so we've analyzed in Schroders and we've identified that the peak of sustainable investing was actually in 2021. So that was the year where SFDR was rolling out to the level two, where the regulation was made a bit stricter. And that was the year where really the appetite was the biggest. It doesn't mean that now the appetite is gone. There's a slow decline, unfortunately, due to other factors. But the good thing is we see Europe is playing a leading role in ESG investing. I can clearly say they are playing a dominant role even because they hold 84% of the global ESG investing worldwide in 2024. So Europe is leading there quite well on that topic.
Okay, really interesting statistics there. How is my investment going to work to make a real positive impact? Maybe I'll start with you.
So I think this all depends basically on the type of vehicle you choose to invest in. So in Schroders, we break it down into three different categories of funds. So we have what we call sustainable driven funds. So that's a fund basically that will have that will seek sustainability at its investment level. So we don't pursue necessarily environmental or social objectives as a finality of the fund, but we will integrate these to the sustainable or the investment decision process. So when we pick a company, we will decide, okay, does this company have enough, you know, or does enough in terms of the environment or social issues? And do we see potential for income here? And then we have what we call, we have an internal tool actually that basically gives a rating to each company that we decide before we invest in. And that tool will give us a positive or negative note for each company and therefore tell us, okay, well, based on your investment decision, this company is rating positively, so it will have a good impact on the environmental, social aspects, or on the opposite, it can also show a negative score. And in that case, we will probably ignore it for that type of product. Then we have also what we call thematic funds. So at Schroders, we decide at the strategy level, okay, I want to create a fund that will invest in healthcare. And that will be the theme of the fund. It will only look at companies dedicated in that entire universe of healthcare providers. It could be hospitals or anything really related to that topic. And that's a way we would be ensuring in the stock picking and the investment process to make sure that we have actually assets in our portfolio that do benefit that specific theme. And also we identify if there is also potential for growth, because if there's not, then there's not really any benefits in doing that. And the last item is what we call impact-driven funds, which is really, so on top of having the investment decision process like the first one, we also have a measurable positive score that we need to get at the end of it. So we would build scorecards, and each asset in the portfolio will have a score attributed to it. And yeah, essentially we make sure that always we have positive scores on different assets. And if we don't, then we can use, you know, engagement with our company, our voting rights on the boards of these companies to express we're not happy with what's happening. We will vote against this decision. Please make better efforts to transform this company into a greener company.
Okay. And at Funderock, is it similar?
Us, it's a bit different because we are a third-party management company. So we do not really, let's say, define the strategy of funds or... But if I have to jump on something that William said, is that now investors have the opportunity to use their money as voice megaphone. So this sustainability and ESG criteria, this is something that company cannot ignore anymore if they want to catch the investor and get their attention. So there is, of course, funds which pursue different goals, but there's also different type of vehicle in which anyone can invest to, let's say, participate into this more sustainable world. For example, you mentioned, William, the shareholder voting. So by investing in a company with active management, participating into this voting, say, okay, I want this company to take this this direction. But there is also small other ways to do it, by example, funding green or social bonds, which are also bonds used to finance environmental, social projects. And there are also what we call the exchange trade funds, ETF, that are easily accessible through platform or even bank apps now. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you. What's the difference between ESG, impact investing, and responsible investing in simple terms? Who wants to take it?
So for me, I would say that they are all related, but at the end, they are all pursuing different goals, because ESG is a risk lens. So that will set a risk framework. And it aims to, let's say, go into, it's more related to financial performance. And the second one, responsible investing, for me, is more a filter based on value. Say, I'm not going to invest in this company because they are producing tobacco, for example. It helps to align the ethics and the portfolio.
And this one is a bit more client-oriented. So if you have a client coming to you asking to set up a fund, he will have his, you know, values, and he will tell you, okay, I don't want my fund to be investing in nuclear power, for example, or weapons. And this, I think, sustainable or responsible investing, sorry, is more on the level of exclusion. So you would exclude certain industries to the investment universe of your fund. So that's how I see it, yeah.
And finally, the impact investing is more mission-driven. It will be, okay, today, what issue I want to address in this world and which company is able to help me addressing this issue.
And also have an actual physical or like a visible impact.
A measurable impact.
Yeah. They can see. Okay. Yeah. Great, thank you. Are there misconceptions, would you say, around sustainable investing? And if so, what are some examples?
I think from my perspective, one of the biggest misconception is that when you invest in a sustainable fund, you think that the objective of the fund is to have a positive impact, which kind of makes sense. But in reality, I think it's not so much about the end goal, but really about how in the decision of the investment process, at least in Schroders, do we pursue these environmental and social aspects? Mm-hmm. So it's not so much about the outcome. So the outcome is obviously trying to make profit for the investor. But the way the investment decision process works, we will implement these ESG criteria, these decision process, this analysis of the stocks, if they are positive impact, negative impact. And this is one of the misconceptions I see a lot, is a lot of people assume I invest in a fund that is supposed to be an Article 8 or 9 fund. Therefore, it will have a positive impact on the world. But that comes back to what I was saying earlier. It depends on the type of product you're investing in. But the majority of funds actually don't have impact-driven objectives, but rather just integrates sustainability risk to the decision investment decision process. Sorry.
Did you want to add anything?
Me, one of the misconceptions that I heard a lot also regarding this sustainable investing is that this is only for institutional investor, which is not the case. A retail investor can also invest into ESG funds. And this is not because you are investing into an ESG fund that you will also sacrifice your return. This is not necessarily related. Of course, as this is more concentrated, the risk is probably higher, but you can also make higher returns. So.
Mm-hmm. And I think also to add the amount of money you have to invest. I think a lot of people think, oh, I need to have a lot of money to invest in order to be able to enter even these funds. But a lot of the Article 8 funds that we sell at Schroders are retail-oriented funds, which are available at any amount. There's no minimum requirements just to invest in that fund. So you can come with 100 euros if you wanted, or 10,000, depending on how much you can afford. But there's no usually limits on that.
How would you say investors balance risk and ethics in their portfolio?
I think it comes back again to responsible investing that we just discussed before. So I see a lot of it more coming from the client himself. So he will have his vision of what is ethical investing, and he will ask us to, let's say, exclude certain industries from the investment portfolio. So at least at Schroders, this is how we see it the most, is we have filters based on client demand on certain industries. So we know, for example, we have a firm-wide exclusions on weapons. We never invest in any defense whatsoever across the company because that was a demand from the clients that we have, and we've reflected it in our sustainability investing policies. Yes, it could be weapons, it can be anything else really, like gambling, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it really depends on the everyone's risk appetite. And at the end, for me, this is a trade-off between ethics value and the financial returns. So if between the three of the category that we mentioned before, I will have to scale it, I will say that first, ESG investing is less risky because it becomes broader than social investing, and then impact investing is just a matter of to which extent I want my investment to be sustainable. And the more I go further, the more the universe is becoming narrow, and then it's increasing the risk.
We've got a lot of uncertainty going on in the world at the moment, geopolitically speaking, but not only. We've got regulatory environment, obviously, is a challenge as well. Can you sort of share your perspectives on this and how it's impacting the companies you work at?
Yeah, so I think it's a very interesting time for sustainability, obviously. We get a lot of challenges, as you may know, on the news every 2 hours, 1 hour. I think one of the biggest, well, at least the biggest challenges we face, I think, these days are challenges to climate commitment from certain nations. Mm-hmm. Will not mention names. I think also, obviously, evolving regulation. That's very important because, obviously, the rollout of SFDR, back in 2021 really triggered, I think, a big rush to that market. But future regulation might do the opposite or might also give another boost to it. So it's we never know until it comes out and how the market will react to that. And I think one of the other items we have, obviously, is war in Ukraine, the impact it has on the macroeconomic environment, but also other topics like fallout of DEI, so diversity, equity, and inclusion. All these things kind of create a lot of uncertainty in the market. And I think the more uncertain a market, the more an investor like us will be inclined to be more precautious on how they invest, mm-hmm. and might not invest so much in sustainability anymore.
Do you see it similarly?
Yeah, there is this economic uncertainty with all the wars going on and the political decision that are taken. But there are, may I also see the regulatory uncertainty because different regions and countries do not have the same approach when it's related to ESG. For example, EU, as you say, a leader, really strict rules when it comes to disclosure, to analysis. And for example, in the United States, this is something that is more politicized. So there is this blurry area into this regarding this ESG and sustainable investing. And there is also a lack of standardization because we do not have today a framework saying, okay, this criteria should be evaluated or defined using this this definition or this framework. So it can sometimes send mixed signal to the investors.
And I think it's part of our responsibility as asset managers, obviously, to understand and mitigate these risks or macroeconomic risks and identify opportunities of transition in these different aspects.
Okay, thank you. How would you say you could demonstrate that a sustainable investment is truly sustainable?
There is some service providers who are basically rating the investment and the companies with also data that they are collecting to say, okay, we analyze this this company and is it truly sustainable, or this one claims to be sustainable and this is in fact less sustainable that it claims. And at the end, this is a huge help for even us as asset manager or for the investors, because we have clear report and clear metrics to that they can refer to. But in a way, we can see also that today there is some discrepancies between those service providers. I guess this is also coming to the fact this is the new topic, a new regulation which is still evolving. So there's still a work in progress to do, but I guess that we are in a good path.
Mm-hmm. And I think it just reflects also the complexity of SFDR in general. It took years for European Union to come up with a regulation that had, you know, it was standing on the road and it was solid. And when eventually they did, it brought all these disclosures that we have to now produce. So the reporting is a way of us informing the investor if we're reaching these sustainable investment goals that we have or not. And obviously, these reportings evolve over time. So each time we update the prospectus, each time there's an annual report closing, we will update these reportings to give the transparency to the end investors. But then we see challenges, like, for example, in UK now, they have their own regulation, TCFD, which is apparently even stricter than SFDR. So, or sorry, it's not TCFD, it's SDR. So they have even stricter regulations. And then because Schroders, for example, is a UK-based firm, we don't know which to apply. Should we apply the stricter model, but then, you know, restrict the universe in Europe? Or should we still apply SFDR in Europe? And it's a whole mess. And it's a bit hard to navigate and give the transparency.
We're coming to the end, so we have some time for some closing remarks. Maybe if each of you have something burning you wanted to share, or one maybe little kernel of information we can leave for the listeners today.
I wanted to touch quickly on what we call active ownership at Schroders. So it's basically a way that we ensure that, I think I mentioned it earlier, how we engage with different holdings that we have. Mm-hmm. So we mentioned voting rights during board meetings. But I wanted to also share that we do a lot of engagement work, mm-hmm. where we would physically go do due diligences in the offices of certain big assets that we hold. And we would engage with these people or board members, for example, and try and talk to them saying, hey, you know, if you invested more in sustainability, if you invested more in carbon neutral assets and stuff like that, we potentially see that your company could grow in this and this amount. And that usually helps these companies decide, okay, that makes sense, I might do that. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, it also brings profit back to us and back to the investor mm-hmm. that invested in our fund. So I think that's another way that we didn't discuss that actually can bring more sustainability, is how we use our power as a firm to influence certain decision-making process in underlying assets.
Me, I would say that as retail investor, but also institutional investor, we should not be afraid to make the choice of the sustainability, because there will be some pushback, say, okay, there is all this regulation, but at the end, it could still be greenwashing. Greenwashing exists, we will not deny it. But if everyone play the game and do it properly, let's say, at the end, this is a win-win for everyone. And there might be short-term volatility, but the ongoing global shift towards sustainability provides strong tailwinds for those who are willing to invest in a more sustainable future.
And I see, just to add one last note, so as I mentioned earlier, 84% of the market is European-driven. Mm-hmm. I saw also recently that the Asian market is starting to also start investing in sustainable assets. Mm-hmm. So it is also promising to see that, you know, emerging continent is now starting to think about all these
questions.
Another
region as well. Yes. Okay, great point. This has been a really interesting discussion, looking at the geopolitical aspects and touches on a lot of topics. So thank you so much for both being here today and sharing your views, Salimata and William. Thank you. This wraps up our episode today. I'd like to thank you guys both. And as a gentle reminder, the Alfi Finance Next Gen podcast is available on both the Alfi website at alfi.lu and on paperjam.lu. Alfie NextGen Finance, connecting today's talent with tomorrow's investment fund leaders.